good. Good to see you, sir.
Yeah.
So I don't think I see anyone who's don't. I don't think I don't see anyone who said they would be here. Okay. So, are we good to start?
I think we might as well. Yeah, we got a nice crowd. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Mm-hmm.
First item, thank you all for coming. Nice to be back. I hope we had some nicer things to show you, but we'll get there. We do have to approve minutes from the June 2nd, 2021 meeting. Have you all had a chance to look at those? If so, we can get a motion to approve.
Anybody, any disagreements on the minutes from 2021? June? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, so for today's new business, we're going to start by reviewing the 2022 winter dredge survey results. So most abundance estimates decreased compared to 2021. That includes the abundance, the total abundance, the adult female abundance, and adult male abundances, were all the lowest in the last 5 years. Total crab abundance decreased from 2021 20% to 227 million crabs. That's the lowest in the 33 years of the survey since the 1990 survey. Juvenile abundance increased 18% to 101 million. It's the second lowest value in the time series, with the lowest value having been 2021. The adult female abundance decreased 39% to 97 million, which is still above the abundance threshold of 72 million crabs and below the target of 196. And then adult male abundance also decreased 27% to 28 million crabs. So a few graphs, you can see 2022 at the end there, well below that orange line, which is the average since 1990. Juvenile abundance, you can see those last 2 years way down there, well below the time series average, which is the orange line, and then that teal line is the average since 2009. We've got the adult abundance, that's the total crabs that are age one or more. Also dropped from 2021, that's easier to hear me now. Adult abundance by sex, we've got the pink line of that female abundance and the blue line of the male abundance. You can see both went down in the last year. The male abundance been decreasing since 2020. And then we've got the adult female abundance. You can see we're still above that threshold below which the stock is depleted, but we've gone a little further down from that target of 196 million. So are there any questions on the abundance graphs? We're going to get a little more detail on abundance trends from Rom and Alex from VIMS in just a second. But any questions on what we've seen so far? All right. Alex, you want to come up?
Hi everyone, my name is Alex. I have a plot here of the average catch of crabs from the VIMS trawl survey for July and August. So this is the summer survey sampling in the main stem of the bay while the sanctuary is closed to fishing. The axes here are a little misleading because this is the density of adult females per meter squared. Usually it's shown 1,000 meters squared, so it's a relative index of abundance there on the y-axis, and we see that first initial drop-off in the early 90s, and we see mature females being very low abundance in the main stem. A bit of recovery after 2008 with the management actions, but more recently, in the past 3 or so years, we've seen a steady decline in the relative abundance of adult females as seen by the trawl survey. Most recently, 2021 was the second lowest year along this time series behind 2006. Of course, this is July and August, so 2022 is not on here. But as of now, 2021 was quite low.
So you'll remember last CMAQ meeting, we were talking about maybe there is the potential to expand the season, and we said we'd wait and hear what the VIMS trawl survey said. Well, we saw that drop in for 2021. You know, not really room to expand there. So give me just 1 minute. All right, Rom, do you want to show yours?
Okay, so first thing I should say is that this is not meant to confuse you. I'm going to try to explain this, but not so that you understand it in detail. What this is a typical graph that we do, or analysis that we do in population dynamics. And the reason we do this, instead of just plotting a single year, is that this is more robust because it actually plots two different years, consecutive years. So on the x-axis, you have female abundance, that's mature female abundance from the DRED survey in a given year, and on the y-axis is the next year. And as I said, the reason we do this is because, you know, you can have a high or low in any particular year, and that doesn't necessarily tell you what the population is doing over the longer term. These kinds of diagrams that are called phase diagrams tell you, give you a sense of what the population is doing over a much longer term. So let me try to just pull out the important things. Remember that we had a decline in the early 90s. We had a decline, but before that, we had pretty high abundance. If you look at 88, 89, 90, 91, we have very high female abundance. The fishery was doing great. Landings were doing great. And that's what you see up here from 91, 92, 93, 94. And this area here, this whole area besides, outside of this red oval, is a high abundance, what we call a regime. That means that's when things are going pretty well. Both the spawning stock is doing well, abundance is doing fairly well. And so that's where we want to be. And that's where we were up until that decline. And remember, that decline, we think, happened because of some kind of environmental event that really dropped the F-zeros, the H-zeros, We had high female abundance, but something happened outside the bay, we think, that prevented a very large number of post larvae of the blue crab to reinvade the bay. And then at the same time, we had high fishing pressure because we had high abundance. And so inadvertently, the fishery was brought into a state of overfishing because all of a sudden there were very few crabs when we expected a lot, and boom. So, and that's what happened. That's what kept us in that. And that's what's happened here. So after 94, you notice that's where we were here for a very long time. We went into a low abundance phase. So that went all through the mid to late 90s and the 2000s up until the management actions in 2008, 2009. And if you look here, you can see, boom, right here is when those management actions pulled us out of that low abundance phase or regime. And then we stayed in there. We've been staying in there for a long time. In fact, we're still... here's 2022. We're still outside of that red oval, but the number that we got in 2022 is low. It's about 100 or so, 101 I think it was. And the problem is that the low regime happens when both in two consecutive years you have abundance that's below 115. So even though it looks like we're here, we could very easily, if we have another bad year, we're shifting back down in there. Now, that's not the biggest problem because you could still pull back out, right, with whether you have management actions or a really good recruitment year. And remember that basically the spawning stock and then the recruitment, the variation in that comes half from the spawning stock itself and how we manage it. But the other half is environmental variation that is literally unpredictable out there. And so we have to deal with that. We can only manage about half of the variation of the spawning stock and abundance. All right, so that this is not a terrible picture, but it does say that we need to be really cautious because this value here is below that 115 that would potentially bring it into a low abundance phase. All right. Any questions on that so far? All right. So A0s. Number one, you'll notice that they vary a lot more. That's typical for A0s. Recruitment can bounce around a lot. But you still have these two phases, right? The low abundance phase, and I won't go back over, but it basically is a similar pattern, and then the high abundance phase. The problem we're seeing is that we have entered that low abundance phase for T0s. Here's 2021, and here's 2022. Okay? So that gives us a real concern that we're not getting, even though the spawning stock seems to be at a reasonable level in the winter, from the winter dredge survey, we're not getting those T0s, the T0s the following year. Something's going on there, and I think when you look at both the trawl and dredge survey data, I think you can understand. I think I feel like I understand what's going on. But first, let me go to the final graph here. Okay, so this is a recruitment to stock relationship. What that is, on the x-axis, we're trying to use A0 abundance in a given, this is winter dredge survey, A0 abundance in a given year, and see how well it can predict female, mature female abundance in the next survey year. Okay? And we have a moderate relationship here, meaning that of all that scatter that you see in the female age 1 plus abundance, about 25% or so of the variation is explained by the age 0 abundance in a given year. So I'm marginally confident in this relationship. What this is saying, if we plot the 2022 age 0, remember we don't have the 2023 female. This is predicting that the female abundance based on this, is going to be about 114, just below that 115 level. However, because of the variation, it could just as well drop below the below the female threshold of 72, or it could be up around here, somewhere between the threshold and target. So I'm not going to bet heavily on this. However, it is suggesting that it's going to be a relatively low year. Okay? So, again, a reason for concern that we really need to do something, if we can, to get that F1 plus up, but then to survive. So let me take you back to, or Lex, if you could take me back to the trawl survey graph. Okay. So let's take a look at this point, 2021. And remember, and that's the second lowest in the time series. And from what we're hearing so far from the trawl survey is that in May they caught two mature females in the main stem. Remember, this is in the main stem where ultimately the spawning grounds and when the sanctuary comes into play. And so, I mean, we're not going to rely on just the May data. In fact, these data are July and August. Those are the best indicators of what's actually out there spawning. So remember that from the DRET survey in 2021, which is the winter, we had reasonable abundance. But by the time those females were now spawning in the sanctuary, they were at the second lowest level. And that, I feel, then explains why the age zeros in 2022 were so low. Because originally we're expecting the F1 plus, meaning the mature females, were moderate in abundance. So why not get moderate abundance of the age zeros? And I believe what's happening is that between the time that the winter DRET survey has a reasonable number of mature females, and then the spawning grounds, by the time the females are able to spawn within the sanctuary, that they're getting hit pretty hard, and most of them are not actually surviving. And anecdotally, I'm hearing from, I do have some friends that are crabbers and crab processors, if you can believe that. I always talk to C. Carino, who runs a seafood house and has for decades in Williamsburg. And what he told me is that what the crabbers were telling him, again, this is just one anecdote, is that they were seeing a lot of females. For instance, in Mobjack Bay, it was packed there. But then they said the crabbers who typically crab there said that there was an influx of crabbers from other places. I don't know from where. And basically they wiped out that big patch. And from what I've heard is they've also wiped out a couple other patches. The problem with the blue crab is they do aggregate females, whether because of environmental conditions or whatever, which then means that you can target them. And kind of like the winter dredgefish we used to do before 2008. So that's where I am right now in terms of what I think is going on and what we need to do. The real problem is we don't want to get, right now we've sort of entered this vicious cycle, and I'm concerned that we're going to remain in there. What I think is happening too is with so few eight zeros, by the time that they get their legal size, that they're not enough of them, and so you're targeting, the targeting could be on the mature females and such. And what if we don't do something to get those F1s up and in the spawning grounds, I don't think we're going to get the A0s up. And so I think we could potentially end up in this vicious cycle where we go right into a low abundance regime. So that's where I think we are, unfortunately. And this is the first time I have to say in probably over a decade, probably 14 years, that I feel the most pessimistic about the situation right now. So,
Ron, crab larvae when it leaves the Chesapeake Bay and goes out in the ocean. Is it any is there any way we can tell what's going on in that end of the phase of the larval production?
We've tried to do that. It is phenomenally expensive mm-hmm. to try to do that. To sample, to sample the juveniles and adults, it's not that big a deal. It's fairly expensive. But then if you want to try to sample the larval stages, mm-hmm. they can go up to 800 miles offshore. They're there from about July, maybe late June, all the way through October. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very difficult to actually get
a sample.
Understand. We had data earlier, but that mm-hmm. program was dropped, okay. unfortunately.
Do they tend to be on top of the water, in the middle?
They typically go to surface. They do go, day and night. They migrate up and down. And then when they come back into the bay, they actually come two different ways. One is on the surface, carried by the winds that are basically driving them back in. Mm-hmm. But there's also an upwelling system that brings in some of those post-larvae back in on the bottom. And, I talk to the physical oceanographers, and I ask them, hey, what's the most likely route? And they're like, they can't even understand mm-hmm. the dynamics of the physical processes well enough yet. That's the unfortunate part. That's why I said mm-hmm. that about 50% of the variation is that. And I will say that we had another red drum peak, right? We had one in 2012, and we had another one last two years, and I think that also hit the 8-0s. So it's not like it's just mm-hmm. crabbers. It's some combination that is just sort of keeping us in this state.
Yeah, I guess, what we seem to be looking at, it looks like we got two problems. We got the juvenile crabs are not making it into the fishery. So the females, they either having them and the larvae is dying, it's not coming back in the bay, or the females aren't getting fertilized and they're not having the eggs. So it seems we got, if any one of those two worked, then you would have more, it would show up more on the growth survey.
That's exactly it. That's why, I think the fall and the spring are the two main periods, that require focus.
I have an observation. In 1990, we had a major, major die-off of eelgrass in the western part of the bay because of a hot summer, hot August. And I propose that that's part of the problem with the 8-0s is they have no place to come in and land in the eelgrass. So, no eelgrass or very little eelgrass come in and land on.
So I thought
little crabs.
Yeah, I thought that too. And I did a whole series of analyses in the early 2000s because we'd had those mass mortalities of eelgrass. And then we also had years of very high abundance. And I found no relationship. And the reason I think is that most recently what we have found is that marsh habitats are as good nursery habitats as eelgrass, and we have a non-native alga, red alga, that's really bushy. That is just as good as seagrass. And so I think that the red alga has actually compensated for eelgrass, and which is why we don't see.
I can tell you where I live on Pecosin River, the eelgrass is gone.
I understand.
And it has been since the 90s.
It makes total sense, but the blue crab is, it lives in the Gulf Coast in areas that have no seagrass whatsoever. They use the marshes as nursery habitats and algal habitats. And then Delaware Bay, same sort of thing. And they are highly resilient to these environmental changes. So I honestly don't feel that is surprisingly that that's a major problem. Now, if we lose all the marsh, then I think it's going to be a real issue.
Development's
trying to do that, yeah. So it's a really good point, but
other observation is somewhere around the early 90s, they put in the second crossing at Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, which changed the hydrodynamics in the whole water column, I'm sure. And I wonder how much that might affect the
So what happened in the early 90s, and that's when I did have larval data from the Chesapeake Bay program. In 1991, if you look there, we had very high female abundance in that graph, just like 90, 89, 88, banner years. And then in 1991, we were able to quantify the numbers of larvae, and they were high. But then we also had information on the numbers of post-larvae that came back in, and they were like virtually zero. So something happened in that stage, I think, offshore that changed it. Now, I don't know if that's when the crossing was made or whatever, but something happened environmentally outside of our control that actually, I think, prevented them from recruiting. And so all of a sudden, as I said, we had very few H0s that grew up to be very few H1s, and the fishery was still going hot and heavy, and so just remained there.
Other questions?
Your summer trawl survey, did that include anything outside the Bridgestone, Cape Henry?
The reason we don't do that is because we did a study some years ago where we sampled extensively outside there. We were looking at the effect of dredge spoil being placed out there, and we found virtually no females outside there. I know they go down and then go out along the coast, right, south coast of Cape Henry. But outside of the bay mouth, we just have not found very many females. So I don't think we're missing them. And the salinity in basically most of the lower bay, south of, let's say, the Rappahannock, is high enough for both the females and the eggs and the larvae. So we don't really think that they move that far out. Our tagging data also, where we tag crabs, showed very few going outside the bay. What the females typically did, the ones that we tagged in the main stem, is they would go into the shallows, feed, and then come back down to try to reproduce another season.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. One question down the end there.
Hey, Chris.
Mr. Mayor, you said there is somewhat of a stock-recruit relationship between juveniles and adult females the next year.
Yeah.
Right. What about between adult females and juveniles the following year?
That's what I'm looking. So in my previous previous publication, we show that there is a significant stock-recruit relationship, which is one of the main reasons why we focus on females in terms of management. And what I'm doing now is actually I just got the data. We're actually taking a look at how close that reflects their relationship is between the trawl survey females and the dredge survey H0s. Because there isn't a strong relationship between the dredge survey females in this year and the F0s in the next year. That's not strong, and it makes sense because those aren't the actual spawning site, they're the potential spawning site. But I can present that at a future meeting, but I do think it's going to show that there's a strong relationship between the trawl females and H0 in the dredge survey.
Mr. Cobb?
I've been on this board many, many years and listened to him talk for many, many years, and it's been a long time since I heard him say, we need to do something.
Yeah.
I'd like to know exactly, even before we start, what, if any, recommendations you or staff have.
I don't have to do something.
I heard that many years ago, and all hell broke loose, so I'd kind of like to know ahead of time what's on your mind.
As Mr. Hudgens said, is that it's that fall period and then the following spring where you're trying to protect the H0s that are maturing at that time of the year in the fall, and then in the spring before they get to the spawning grounds. I think we need to figure something out at those two time periods. I think the summer, by the time you get to the summer, starting June through September, they're in the spawning sanctuary, so I think that's not the most important time. That's not where I would recommend any kind of change at this point.
Do you have any recommendation at this point?
No, not yet. I've just started discussing it with Alexa, and Pat. So no, this is just the start of it right now.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Mr. Nixon, down there.
What year was it that you established the Bay Sanctuaries other than the original Lower Bay Sanctuary?
Yeah, 2001, 2002.
I looked it up while we were talking.
Okay.
The second span was awarded in 1995 and finished in 1999.
Okay.
Rahman, a couple of years ago, you gave us some really good graphs that showed kind of pockets of abundance based on the survey.
Yep.
Anything you could tease out from this year's survey in terms of, obviously, numbers are down overall and things like that, but are we seeing any other geographic trends in terms of less crabs in the Lower Bay, more in the middle, things like that?
Right. I sort of held off on doing that because those were much more informative when there was a dredge fishery. But I have them plotted through last year, but I'll go ahead and plot them for this year. My guess is what they're going to show are these pockets of abundance that basically the crabbers found. Like in Mobjack, there's always high abundance in Cape Henry, off Cape Henry down there. There's usually high abundance in the main stem between the Rappahannock, typically in the York rivers. And then there are usually a couple pockets. This is for mature females. Age zeros are different. And somewhere around the Mobjack Bay area or so. So they're very obvious, you know, when we've seen that. In fact, we've used that to make some recommendations about where Baltimore District Corps should not be dropping dredge spoil.
Right.
So... Okay.
Yeah, one question, Ron. Mobjack Bay that you talked about, I know a lot of crabbers had crab down there this year, and it wasn't the crab there that the survey showed, I can tell you that. I don't remember anybody catching their limit there, whether it be
right.
A small limit, medium limit, big limit. It just wasn't, the crabs just weren't there, you know.
Right.
You had to go well to the east offshore the pound line to find any quantity of crab,
yeah.
and that even wasn't many, you know. It was just a few pockets in different areas. Just didn't have the amount of crab, just didn't burn. There it is in the spring of the year. I mean, everybody's got a lot of big rigs now, and they when they find a place of crabs, everybody knows about it and all the pots.
Yeah.
We got out of state. I think it's a big problem. A lot of guys coming down here, with big rigs. I think that's something we need to look at.
So this is off the top of my head, but that just triggers that.
Yeah.
To me, that would be one way to go, is to try to limit the influx of the crabbers coming in, because they have huge rigs, in Maryland and such. So that's something to consider.
Yeah. And I think March, we always start the season March 17th, but certainly that's very well but abundant, I think this year we had one decent week, and then I think we had a bad week, So most of the guys, as far as the deep water rigs, didn't get out until April 1st. I don't know how it was over in Cape Charles, but on this side, Ernie, wasn't it? It was probably after April, wasn't it?
Yeah, last weekend.
Yeah, I misspoke. I think I said Cape Henry. The pockets are off Cape Charles.
Cape Charles, So, it's not... I mean, March didn't have much bearing on it because it just wasn't that many people crabbing. I mean, y'all got the report, so y'all see what came in March, and then take a look at there.
Mr. Chairman, we tried that many years ago to stop the influence of marauders coming down, and it's almost anyway. We couldn't do it. It was against law. We couldn't do it because the crabs migrate from one state to another.
Mm-hmm.
We tried that way back when that first started.
Well,
one thing to keep in mind is that
the crabs, the females that move down to Virginia do not go back to Maryland. They stay in Virginia. They're not, no, they don't go back up. Once they get into the Lower Bay, the spawning grounds, and Lower James River and such, they do not go up. I mean, we have extensive tagging information that says that they're staying here. So that spawning stock is staying here.
Well, why do the females in October, November, Maryland, why do they travel down the bay?
What we think is going on is that the dead zone in the middle of the bay that starts July, August, September, we think that that's what's keeping them from moving down. And so that's why you see that the females from Maryland are, they're all coming down after August typically.
Because I got a guy in Maryland I watch a lot on YouTube, and he's grabbing shallow water, 15, 17 feet. He's not catching anything in deep water. Mm. He's not catching anything, period.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have 100 pounds and a 500 crab box, you know. Right. But a little different fishery up there.
A clarification on something you just said, that the crabs, there are crabs. They're Virginia crabs.
No, they're Maryland and Virginia crabs.
Maryland and Virginia crabs, but once we get to a certain age, they don't go migrating north.
Nope.
What is that age?
It's
the first
mature
year?
As soon as all mature females stay in the lower bay.
Okay, so once they molt that last time,
they come down, and then they don't go back up.
But once they molt the last time, say in the early spring, and they're not going to have eggs, sponges until the next year, do they move back up the bay, or do they also stay local?
Some of them are actually going to have sponges that year. If they mature then, they're likely part of the peeler runs, and those are going to spawn that year.
Any other questions?
Well, he's not going far. All right, so we'll get a little more into the harvest now for 2021. First couple slides are going to be the baywide harvest. Now, remember, the Virginia numbers for these do not include the seaside. This is baywide harvest specifically. So harvest did decline. I think baywide is probably about 17%. You can see Maryland appears much lower than they were in 2020. I've heard from staff that's mostly a delay in reporting, trying to get those reports into their system. So we might see that number creep back up once they kind of rerun some of this. So here's female harvest. This is the bars are absolute harvest. The lines are percent of the bay from which jurisdiction. So Virginia increased our share of the female harvest while Maryland's declined. And you can see our female harvest decreased a little bit in 2021. Maryland's decreased much more, but again, we're not sure what of that is absolute and what of that is their reporting lag. Male harvest, the share by jurisdiction stayed fairly similar. We don't see too many changes in that. And, as Rom was just saying, we know males are mostly up in Maryland. We get most of the females down here. Here's the adult female exploitation rate. So that is what percent of females, of female abundance, is caught in the previous year by both the commercial and recreational fisheries. So 28% is our female-specific target, 37% is our threshold, which over that we're overfishing. In 2021, we were at 26%, so still below the target and well below the threshold. Adult male exploitation rate did increase last year, mostly, I'm guessing, because of the decrease in abundance. But we're still at 31%, which is below that conservation trigger of 34%. Now, 34% isn't like the female-specific reference points. It's not something where we have to take action if we exceed that. But if we exceed that conservation trigger, it's time for us to kind of reevaluate the abundance and the harvest and see what action, if any, needs to be taken. And this is a graph of juvenile abundance on the blue and baywide harvest in the orange, and you can see how closely these track. So we saw juvenile abundance decline these last 3-4 years, and we saw harvest decline about the same. So moving on to the Virginia-specific harvest, which I see I forgot to fix. Sorry about that. We're at about 18.3 million pounds in 2021, which is a 15% decrease from 2020. Usual percentages by gear, 97% hard crab, a little under 3% from the peelers, and you know, less than 1% from all the other gears. Now, while harvest decreased 15%, the dockside value actually increased 14%, which I'm sure you all saw those high prices last year. So value stayed up there. We had 855 active harvesters, and they took almost 57,000 trips, which is just a little bit of a decrease from 2020. So this graph is Virginia's commercial harvest in the blue bars and the value in orange. And then all the previous values are adjusted to 2021 dollars according to the consumer price index. So as you can see, we lost some of the harvest, but we gained in value. We've got the annual harvest, again, the blue bars, compared to the time series average since 94 on the green. And then we've got the average since the 2008 measures went into place in the orange. And both 2020 and 2021 have been below that average. Again, the hard crab pot harvest and effort. You can see trips went down a little bit, not as much as the harvest did. We've got catch per unit effort on the green, so that's what the catch was per trip over the last year. You can see catch per unit effort has been generally increasing, but it has been decreasing these last 3 years. That's 2 years, I suppose. And then we've got crab pot effort by harvester. So this is how many harvest days each harvester took. I was looking at, this is 2021, but looking at 2020, 2020 was more towards the middle, towards that 26 to 75 range, say. But this year we had more in the 0 to 25 range. Kind of shifted a little towards the lower end there. And we've got license eligibility, sales, and activity for the hard pot licenses. You can see that activity declined a little bit in 2020, understandably, but gained back up to 65% of eligible licenses were actively fished in 2021. Here's the monthly crab pot harvest. The blue bars are the 2021 total. And then the orange is the 2011 to 2021 average. So, you know, we're used to March being very variable based on the weather. April was about average. That was actually the highest month of the year. And then just about every other month, especially there in the summer, was below average. Then we've got peeler pot harvest. You can see 2020, 2021, very low, well below the both the 1994 to 21 average and the 2009 to 2021 average, which is the orange one down there. Blue bars are, again, the peeler pot harvest, and then the line is trips, number of trips. Declined slightly, not too much, but it's generally been declining since about the early 2000s. Now we've got the peeler pot license eligibility, sales, and activity. Again, we recovered a little bit from the 2020 fishing levels. We had dropped from 35 down to 31% last year. We're back up to 34%. which still leaves a lot of the licenses latent, not being fished. So we've got a few next steps today. Of course, CMAQ presenting the results. I'll be presenting the results at commission tomorrow. On the 25th, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee is going to be reviewing these results, making some recommendations maybe, we'll see. And then that report usually comes out in mid-June. We're hoping to have another CMAQ meeting in 2 weeks, hoping for Monday, June 6th or Wednesday, June 8th. We'll maybe talk about that soon. June 28th will be the commission meeting for any management measures to go into place for July. So I'm going to talk a little bit about potential management measures. Some of them are things we can put in place for June, for July. That's what we're hoping to focus at our next meeting. And some things we know we can't get into place right away, so we'd probably wait until the 2023 fishing season, which is why we have down there another CMAQ meeting in fall. And then in September, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee is holding a data workshop. So some of what you heard Rom talk about, the environmental factors, we're hoping to explore what their roles are in these low abundances, the low recruitment, and maybe evaluate the need for a new stock assessment. We haven't had a stock assessment since 2011, so we're hoping, unfortunately the funding just hasn't been there, so we're thinking this year might mean it's time for a new one, get some new data sources, get some new models in, so that's something we'll be talking about in September as well. So any questions on what we've talked about so far with the harvest or with next steps?
That's all I have. Just out of curiosity, when you were running through the adult female harvest, how do you folks figure in the crabs, the female crabs that were caught on the spring peeler run or even through the summer? I know you don't consider them adults, but they turn into adults fairly quickly, and then they're harvested.
So,
but if they're removed before they're harvested as hard crabs, how do you count them? I mean, I know when we report, we turn them in numbers, not in pounds or bushels. How do you account for the amount of them that are harvested against the adults that are harvested months later, that they never get an opportunity to become an adult?
So I think one of the things you're getting at, Pete, is one of the holes in reporting is generally one of the things we're getting at is the whole one of the holes in reporting is when we talk about the peeler fishery, most often our reporting is what you actually peeled or what you actually sold. They're not actually reporting what they pulled out of the pot. So we know when we look at that peeler data, there is a certain percentage of peeler fishermen that aren't reporting everything they harvest. They're reporting what they sold. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at.
I'm not getting at that at all because, you know, I have peeler caught in a couple of years because it's not worth doing where I am.
How do we split them out, male and female?
A lot. You know, I catch, you know, 7,000-9,000 a day back when there were plenty of crabs. Now, how that equates to, that's only over a two-week period of time in the spring. How that equates to pounds or bushels of harvested females as adults, I don't know. Is there any way to calculate that? Is there any way to interpolate
that? So with peelers and soft crabs, we assume there's a 50-50 split. We assume that 50% is male, 50% is female, because we don't have a better way to do that. So there is some assumptions in there for those peeler crabs.
Yeah, well, that's an incorrect way to do it because on the duller run, you're catching 98%.
So the entire peeler harvest is 100,000 crabs, 100,000 pounds. It's not, it can be up to upwards of 500,000 pounds. So it's not a significant portion of our total harvest and removals of the entire fishery. But you're right, with sampling and funding, there is a better way to be able to find. We just don't have the sampling to be able to get that information. Not through mandatory reporting.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Nixon. There's a question somewhere down here. Who has a
question? I got
Mr. Hudson, yeah.
Alex, can you go back to the screen with the hard pot license? Eligible, is that everyone that's on the waiting list, the top blue line?
Blue does not include the waiting list.
Okay.
It's everyone who could go to a licensing agent this year and get their license.
Okay.
So not all of them buy their licenses. Mm-hmm. The ones who do, that's the red line, that's sold.
Okay.
And then even of those, not everyone who buys their license fishes it. So that's the green.
So if the blue line, if they don't buy a license, are they removed from the fishery?
Not unless they stop buying their commercial card.
Okay.
So, and you can see
833 harvesters reported catch.
Yeah. So you can see on the blue line, it's been mostly flat since about 2014.
Mm-hmm.
We took a little dip this year when we reevaluated who's.
2009.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of it.
So since 2009, it's been pretty flat. And then I believe the 2013 dip and then the 2020 dip are when we went through and looked at who hasn't been buying their commercial card. Because once they don't have a commercial card, they lose their licenses. So that's the only time we've decreased that eligible number.
So if they don't buy it that one year, then they couldn't return and buy a license the next year.
Right.
Is VMRC, are y'all selling any license, any upgrade to license? Say if I had a 100-pot license and I came down here, are y'all upgrading any license to, say, 150-pot, 200-pot? Are you aware of anything
going on?
You mean
to do a different pot category?
No, just increase in license, the amount of pots.
Okay. I think the only time we would be increasing the number of licenses would be when that waiting list comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we have, I believe it's 3 consecutive years above 215 million crabs. I'm not sure if we're going by the reference points, but it would be 3 years above 215.
Yeah. So if you got a 100-pot license and you want a 150-pot, then you got to buy it from somebody else.
Yeah.
That's the only alternative. Right. Okay, I got one more question. I'm a little confused on all these regulations, and Pat might be able to explain this to me. Okay, so I got a boat, and I got a big license. I got a 500-pot license. And I've got 2 extra people on my boat. Can one of those people buy a license if it becomes available to sell, to buy?
Yeah, they can buy it from someone else.
Oh, 2 of them could. You could have 3 licensed people on one boat.
Yes, but you can only take one.
But you can only fish one, right?
Yeah.
The highest one,
yep.
That particular day.
Right.
But the next day starts a new day, right? Yeah. Okay. Because it's a lot of that going on. And that, you know, I can understand why, you know. I mean, people got to make a living, you know. It's a very concentrated fishery now, you know, and it's really difficult for the, you know, they have to make it when they can make it, you know, so everybody goes as hard as they can go for a short period of time, like now. Everybody's 2-3 weeks and not going to do anything, you know.
Mm.
So we're forcing these people to do this kind of stuff, you know, and even though they don't mind spending the money to do it, you know, because it evidently pays off, or it wouldn't be financially lucrative to do it, you know. Just kind of curious to have those. But you also have to be a resident of the state of Virginia to hold a license.
Mm-mm.
You don't?
Nope. We can have out-of-state licensees. We are not allowed to keep out-of-state harvest
Maryland,
licensees
yeah,
out.
Cool.
I'd like to see some numbers on
yeah.
that.
Do you know how many people in Maryland have a Virginia license?
I don't off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. We've looked, and it's not many.
I mean,
yeah.
You think?
I'd have to look at
20, 30?
I know I've presented it to the committee before. I'm going to say less than 20, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check previous presentations.
So I think one thing that would be a little interesting to see at the next meeting, not tonight,
mm-hmm.
is on this plot, only instead of eligible licenses, eligible number of pots over the years, because we've done reductions in the number of pots eligible to fish, and then I think we've taken them back up a little bit and then back down a little bit and such. And it would be interesting to see how that goes, and include with that peeler pots and go back a few years when the peeler pots really blasted off. And I imagine the big drop in eligible was when they had the buyout, which really wasn't a buyout. It ended up being some people made lots of money and stayed in the fishery.
Any questions, Tony? Yes, sir.
I believe on the slide on the threshold for the females, you conveyed 31%. On the males, it was 34%. I'm just curious why that is, how that number's arrived.
It's going to be differences in just reproductive.
There's more males to harvest? Is that?
No. Well, one male can fertilize multiple females, where each female only reproduces the one time. So I imagine that would be most of the difference. Because it is a sex-specific stock assessment, we do assess them separately.
It's 37%.
What was that question again, Johnny? I didn't hear the whole thing. I'm getting
threshold for the different sexes was different. I'm just curious how the different. Well, females 31 and males 37.
But one of them, it's mandatory that we do something. The other one, it's advisory that we do something. The lower one is advisory. The 37, if we hit that, we're supposed to do
that
something.
That begs the next question, which is why I'm here.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
Alexa, that percentage will go up as the abundance goes down, right?
So if we harvested the same amount next year as we did this year and the population drops, mm-hmm. then we'd see a higher exploitation rate.
Because I remember several years back, we were in the 16 to 18% range, you know, and mm-hmm. now it's up 26%. Yeah.
So, Alexa, on the agenda, it says discussion of possible management responses.
So it's not going to be anything we haven't seen or discussed before. I've got some ideas up here. So the idea with having that meeting 2 weeks from now is we don't have options for you right now, but we'd like to talk about the committee's priorities, where you'd like us to look, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and to get some thoughts before we spend the next few weeks crafting some options, running numbers. We've got people working on models right now. So we've got, in the first column, things we can do this year, things we could put into place in July for July through the end of the season. And then we've got on the right-hand column more changes to the system, which are things we can't put in place right away. So those are things we can talk about during that fall meeting. So this year we could decrease bushel limits. We can reduce the season. We could, we've been talking about with the recreational 5-pot, is there anything we can do with the season there? We've got the sponge crab dates, anything we can do with that? And then for next year, we've got ideas about agents. Right now, we know there's a lot of people who agents are their business plan. I've heard a lot of people talking about Maryland, especially with that. So one thought is to have agents be a temporary emergency thing. So you've got, you sprain your wrist, you had someone pass away out of state, you can't fish your pots, you can apply to us for a 10, 14-day temporary agent to, make sure your pots don't go unfished and, if necessary, pull them. We've been talking about transfers, having a system like we've got in the oyster fishery where you have to have activity in order to transfer to someone outside the family. So the percent of eligible licensees who are active is 65%. That means 35% of people, if they want to join the fishery right away, they could. Or they can transfer it to someone who's willing to put, who's going to put in the time and effort that next year. So, you know, if we get so many more people in, that could do some damage. So if we require activity in order to transfer outside of your family. One thing we've been hearing a lot from people is pot tagging. I've gotten a lot of calls lately, I think law enforcement has, with people just fishing too many pots. And people know it, but it's very hard to check. As law enforcement, you know, they have to go out on one day and pull every single pot. And I hear from people who put their limit out in each river. So we've been talking a lot to Marty up at Potomac River Fisheries Commission. They've got a pot tagging system. Does anyone fish in the Potomac here? Okay. We've been wondering if anyone has experience with it. We'll probably reach out to some harvesters up there. You know, what they do up in the Potomac is they give you stickers for your buoy, and they give you your pot limit plus a 5% buffer. So you lose a pot, you don't have to come to us, you can just use your buffer. And then they also have available to purchase. You come in with an affidavit saying, you know, I lost this many pots in the hurricane, I need more. That's available. Other things. So pot tagging and the defining the bushel basket, those are more enforcement issues. It's not we're going to reduce harvest by doing this. It's we can reduce illegal harvest with this, which isn't quantifiable because, you know, people aren't telling us, yes, I caught this many bushels with 800 pots. So defining a bushel basket, do that as well. And then also gotten calls about peeler pot bushel limit. Like Adam said, not everyone's reporting what they're harvesting for the peeler fishery. Some of them are reporting what they sell and what, you know, what doesn't make it out to market isn't getting captured by our reporting. So let's maybe talk first about any of the 2022 measures, that left-hand column. Anyone have thoughts to begin us with?
Mr. Danford?
I've got a question. You're talking about a recreational crab season.
So the...
I get that. My question is, why can't you make a season for out-of-state, you know, out-of-state people? It's a privilege to crab in the state of Virginia.
It
I mean, that, you know, a non-resident come in after, you know, June 1st. We're evidently having a problem. Everybody's targeting the bed, the crabs that bed down. All we've done is shifted effort from the crab dredge fishery to the pot fishery.
Yep.
Everybody knows it, you know, So, and it seems to me for Cape Charles in particular that, you know, everybody's going to deep water now. They didn't do it before, and they're targeting that crab. And it's mostly a lot of Marylanders. I, you know, I don't care where you're from. You know, it doesn't matter. If you break the wall, you break the wall, and if you don't, you don't, or whatever. That's here or there. But we have a problem with out-of-state people coming in, out-of-state people that used to crab in Maryland, and they're restricted from even fishing the state of Maryland now. They've lost their license, but yet they can still come here. That is not acceptable to me at all.
This is something we've been down before. We've looked at in the past.
Yeah.
We've been advised. There's two different things on that. There's reciprocity agreements,
right,
not just with blue crabs, but pretty much all our licenses, whether it's recreational, commercial. We have reciprocity agreements with Maryland. So when you start changing the reciprocity agreement for one license, it affects all the other fisheries and all the other reciprocity agreements. The second part is we've looked at through our council, and we can't discriminate against user groups that live in separate states. We are allowed to charge different fees to out-of-state licenses, but we can't necessarily eliminate you from a fishery or not allow you. I'm sorry?
How about an agent?
Same thing.
You can't?
Well, so not to get too far ahead, but when we look at agents, we only have about 8-9 agents a year that are from out of state.
Well, last year it was 11.
Again, but not a significant portion of that 129. It is a limited. So even if we could limit that, you're only talking about 10 people. It's not putting a significant dent in this harvest that we're talking about. I understand what you're saying, but it goes to the same thing about discriminating against user groups.
Okay.
I think the other thing that comes up against agents all the time is just because they have a Virginia address or a P.O. box doesn't make them a Virginia resident. Again, not something we can regulate, not something that we can
quantify
either. So it concerns are heard, but some of the things are outside of our control of what we can do.
Okay. Mr. Hutchins, you had something?
Yeah, I'll just comment on the decreasing the bushel limit. You know, I just don't see how we can do anything there. I mean, from my perspective, as a crabber, I mean, we've got a significant reduction in bushel limit as it stands, 15%. And I don't know if anybody even catching the limit. So it would be a moot point. I mean, why decrease the limit when, I mean, I guess they could if you decreased it down far enough, but I just don't see much that we could do there. You know, season reduction, you know, to me, maybe we could do something in March, you know, a week or two there, start at April 1st or something. Just my thoughts, you know, it's not you had the numbers there in March. It wasn't many crabs caught in March, you know. So, and most everybody does start April 1st anyway.
So, if I could ask a question off of Mr. Hutchins here, opening up to the committee, that is the kind of information we're looking at. If we need to go into a season reduction, is eliminating March acceptable for all areas of the bay? Is eliminating parts of November acceptable for all parts of the bay? Because I'm sure, depending on where you fish, the answer is going to be very different.
Earlier, yeah.
And that's the kind of information that we need to bring forward. But there can't be an answer. It's very difficult for us to work with an answer that you can't cut March and you can't cut November and you can't cut bushel limits. That leads us in a space with management that doesn't give us many other management tools that we have that we can show that we have some kind of harvest decrease. So we are looking for some constructive feedback, and because we're going to have another meeting in 2 weeks. So if you want us to look at, hey, what kind of savings would we have if we decrease bushel limits or decrease females in November? What would we have if we didn't start the season until April 1?
Right.
But if the committee's not interested in those things, we also need to know that as well.
Mr. Cox, you have...
Yeah, we're talking about the same things we've been talking about for 20 years. This has been over, and Pete can verify. He's been on here forever with me. This is the same thing we've talked about for 20 years. Now we've got back to the when we go open the season up. We preached this for years and years and just got it changed. It makes no difference if you close March, January, December. It has nothing to do with time. All has to do with water temperature. If it's cold in March and you say, well, we're going to close March, and it's cold, nobody puts pots on board, you've accomplished zero. If you close crab potting in January, you've accomplished zero.
And that's where we have these longer-term things that if we want to explore these longer-term things, I think last time we brought agents in front of this committee, the consensus was we don't want to talk about it for 2 years. Here we are, 2 years later, and we're in a situation where you have experts saying that, hey, there is a situation that we're concerned that you don't hear from us all the time. So if we're not interested in cutting seasons and bushel limits, there are some longer-term options in there that do have some kind of harvest savings in there that we do need to consider seriously at a committee.
Mr. Sandberg,
yeah. What kind of reduction are you looking for percentage-wise?
We don't know yet. We have a meeting on... Go ahead.
We've been talking to Maryland somewhere between 5 and 10%.
5 and 10. And back in 2008, we took 34% reduction.
Right.
So we're continually reducing, and we're putting more and more measures in, and we're not solved. The problem's still here. We're not doing anything. You know, I think a reevaluation of the sanctuary itself needs to be looked at. What effects does that have? I mean, basically, I'll tell you point blank, he brought up a good point. There's all the, and you can correct me on this, can you survey juvenile crabs in water less than 6 foot? Were you capable of doing that this year?
Or not with the wind address survey, no.
No, and that's been, you. And so you've missed probably some juveniles because you said the marsh.
We missed anywhere between 60 and 80%.
Right.
We did have funding 1 year.
do that. So, I mean, the juveniles could still be there. We just don't know. And I can tell you my point of it is I'm going, as soon as the sanctuary, May 15th, rolls around, I'm up in the river, okay, and I'm catching these, basically these crabs that just shed out, big, viable females, okay? They're being harvested. It's no different than a peeler potter. The peeler potter, that right there, we shouldn't even be talking about that. We need to talk about the sanctuary and the hard crabbers harvesting the female crab and the tributaries. You know, change the days of the sanctuary. Let us stay out there later.
So you want to explore widening the time to the sanctuary.
I think you should open it up
to alleviate some of the pressure on those tributaries.
Yeah, I mean,
jamming everybody up in shore every year and wondering what happens to your busted soaks and
that can be something again long term looking at 2023.
We started with the sanctuary. Things are starting to go back downhill again. You know, then we changed the dates. The sanctuary, in my mind, is not working, has not worked. It may save a portion, but you've got to save crabs in the tributary so they can get there, and they're not getting there. You know, we used to spread out. Crab dredging broke the big bunches of crabs up, dispersed them throughout the whole bay. You don't see that anymore. They're tight little pockets. We go there, we put our pots on top of it, catch them up, and we move on. That's what we do.
That's a great thing for
that's what we do.
The fall meeting to look forward to 23, but that ship has sailed for 22.
And as far as, and I'll say this, you know, I mean, I'm going to roll them out. the penalty, no call rings. What's the penalty for that? Nothing. People have got no call rings, closed call rings, small clothes, I mean, everything. There's no penalty. I don't get it. You know, enforce the laws. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, you brought up, you know, the tagging of pots, that doesn't do any good. Deep water, the buoys suck under. You won't find them. The officers can't even get to the buoys to pull them up to see that there's no call rings.
And on top of that, we change buoys.
Yeah, there's all.
You got deep water buoys and shallow water buoys, so we change buoys.
Yeah.
So now you got that question. We were talking about tags 15 years ago. That joke did.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking bad about law enforcement by no means, because I know that they do their job. They have a hard time doing it. I understand that. But sooner or later, when you look at a crab pot on the dock that has no call rings or closed call rings, a light ought to go off in your head and go, okay, that number, I'm going to go look at it. And I think there was an officer that did that this year, and I'm about time. You know, I applaud him. Okay, I'm done.
All right. Well, Ms. Sanford, appreciate your passion there.
I understand. Mr. Crowder, you worked up. I understand.
Being the only recreational crabber on this committee, if you start talking about taking days off the recreational season, I want you to do the calculation of how many commercial days are the equivalent to taking a month or whatever off the recreational. I think you'll find it's less than one. And so the point being that cutting back the recreational season, which is already way reduced compared to the commercial season, I think is a non-starter. The other thing that, and it's why I suggested you look at the number of eligible pots. The problem with the blue crab fishery is it's overcapitalized. They tried to fix it with a buyback, but they did the buyback. And this committee, when we voted on the buyback and it went to the commission the first time, it was very clear. You sell your license in, you're out of the fishery for 3 or 5 years, something like that. You could get into other commercial fisheries, but you are done crabbing. The commission in the middle of the summer, when it happened in September, changed that and said, no, you don't have to get out of the fishery. You can get another license. And that's what happened with probably a substantial fraction of the people who got buyback money. And we have to come up with a way to reduce the amount of gear that's in the water and get it to what I think is the important people who should have these licenses and be able to crab is the full-time commercial waterman.
That's all you got to do.
And that, I think, is important, and I don't know how to do that.
And I think that's some of the things we're looking at when we say transfers and reducing latent effort up there and pop
tag. But transfers, nobody transfers their license unless they can sell it, and that means you're going to get a one in and or one out and one in.
So currently in the oyster fishery, something that was adopted in recent years is you could not transfer your oyster license unless you were active for 40 days. I'm not saying that 40 days is the right answer, but there is an aspect to look at. If you have 600 licenses in the hard crab pot fishery right now that are inactive, when abundance is low like this, what we don't want is those becoming active, or if the getting starts getting good, we don't want them just jumping in and overcapitalizing. So the idea of if you want to transfer a license, you should have 15, 20, 25, 30 days of harvest on there, or it should be directly to your family because of death, because of military, because of health issues. We understand those things happen too. So the idea of one in, one out, that is correct, but it should be one active in, one active out versus the other way. So that is what we are trying to, exactly what you're talking about, overcapitalization. Those are some of the tools that we have.
But one in, one out is not going to reduce the number of licenses out there.
Yeah,
and the amount of gear that's licensed. I don't know how to fix that. The buyout was a hopeful thing, but I think it failed. The other thing that I'll mention, because I'm speaking now and then somebody else can take their turn, or I'll try to be quiet after that. Transfers of license or using of agents. I still do not understand how this agency can break state code and allow the temporary transfer of a commercial waterman's card. It clearly states in state code that this card shall not be transferable. There is an exception where the commission can allow early entry, and they use that exception with the commission saying if you have somebody who, or not having the wait period, if you have somebody that's taking their card out off the market, we'll let you get another one. But using an agent temporarily by giving them a commercial waterman's card is strictly against state code. And I think if we're going to use agents, it should be somebody who's already a licensed commercial waterman, and that I agree that it should only be a temporary emergency basis thing.
I don't think you understand what's going on with those agents. They don't get their own card. They have to carry the card that they're the agent for. They don't get their own card.
That's what I'm saying.
But it disallows the person that's hiring the agent to do anything else.
But state code says you can't give your commercial waterman's license to me so that I could go work your crab pot license. State code says it's not transferable.
I don't like it either, but I think we had this discussion a couple of years ago here, but I think you're misconstruing what code says.
Yeah. Code says it's not transferable.
They're not transferring it. They're just giving it to him to
use. It's a temporary transfer.
No, it's not.
Semantics of word. The term transferable means I'm giving it to you in perpetuity. Where you're transferring the license from me to you.
Then I believe where it says agent, it says temporarily transfer. I believe that's what's in the code.
Let me explain.
I'll look into it for the next.
We can. I'm sure the Attorney General can give us some kind of guidance on that.
We can talk to counsel.
You know, there's a catch to this, and I don't know if many people. I've tried to explain it before. I went over to the commission. I explained it to them one day when I was starting to get alarmed about this. My number is 628. And I was out on the river one morning, just was getting light enough to see, and my buoys are green, about the color of Johnny's shirt, and white. And I'm going down the line of pots, and I reached out and I hooked this buoy. And it looked just like mine, and I went to pull it in the boat. And we have limited entry to some degree, and the number on that thing was 8,336. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, we've had limited entry for 20 years. How the hell is my number 628 in 1993? We got 8,336 people that have been through this fishery. Hell, now they've gone over 10,000. But those are transfers. When an agent gets a card and a license to use from another crabber, they don't switch the numbers. He just gets the
Does that mean that I can lend my personal recreational fishing license to somebody so they can go fishing on it because I'm not transferring it to them?
Yeah, but they're not changing the numbers. The numbers don't change. It's just somebody else can be on the boat and fish that gear. And the reason this started was because the dumbass sitting at this end of the table years ago, before all this stuff, the crab license said the license had to be in the name of the operator of the boat. Yep. This is prior to 1993.
Yep.
And we had a fellow at Lynnhaven that would go out and crab in the morning, and if he had to run his store, he'd let his crew go back out and crab. And you could do that gill netting, you could do that crab dredging, you could do that eel potting, you could do that everything but crabbing. So we said, well, what the heck's the sense of that? Was just so we made it so that somebody else on the boat could run the license. This was back before limited entry or any of that.
Yep.
So that's how this whole mess started. And then with this agent thing, it morphed into, as Alexa said,
business
plan, and people would go out and get a license transferred into their dog's name, their wife's name, their cousin's name, whatever, and then they would allow somebody else on the boat to carry it, and they could fish two or three rigs of pots, which is what JC was talking about, and that's how this whole thing has worked. We have people where I am, I know a father and son that have three licenses, and they say we fish one rig one day and one rig the next day and one rig the next day, and they both split up the pots, and that wasn't the intention of it. The intention was if somebody needed to have somebody go work their gear for them for a day or two or under a situation, they could. But it's turned into something else. And nobody's been willing to do anything about it. But it's got nothing to do with code. Zero.
Yeah, I've spoken to people who tell me they need an agent because they set their pots down off, you know, down Lower Bay, but their long weekend's up and they have to get back to being a teacher in Maryland. That's a business model. That's agent as a business model.
I mean, how much difference do you think getting rid of agents will make, really? You think those people can't just transfer the license if you do away with it?
They can. But yeah, then the license holder would be the one fishing it versus someone else.
I'm just saying, it just saves you from changing your number every year. People are still going to be the same.
On the transfer, so they can't keep transferring it.
It's still going to be the same gear in the water.
You also, when you transfer it away, you do lose your rights to it. So whoever you transfer it to, you either trust them very much or...
I know how it works.
But yes, there is a... If you eliminate agents, if you cut back on agents, there is be a certain amount of...
Three good agents. I don't know how many it is.
It's just not going to be a wave of wand and they're all gone.
Absolutely not.
All right. I just want you all to know that.
So...
Alexa, do you think our reporting, you think all this stuff is getting reported? Are you showing that 833 harvesters? Are you getting 833 reports of people harvesting crab? Okay, I just wondered how much of it was being done.
So, we are an hour and a half into. We just scheduled for 2 hours. We have had one suggestion from Mr. Sanford to relook at the sanctuary dates. You know, a lot of this is good conversation, but it doesn't give us much to come back to you in 2 weeks with information or anything that you wanted to look at. So it is good conversation, but not a lot of direction. So if we could look at some direction over the next 30, 40 minutes before the end, that would allow us to bring something back to you that you've asked for.
I just have one question for the committee. I mean, you've heard the report. I mean, you're fishing. It seems as though the number of crab was caught last year decreased. Everybody seems to agree with that. And do you also agree that that's really what's happening in the bay? There are fewer crabs. I mean, it's not somebody's imagination, right? I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay.
This is the first year I've had people call me and tell me the dredge survey results before I had them.
they said it's going to be a percentage down.
They said they didn't see him last year. They said it's going to be bad, right? They said, what are the new measures we're looking at? And I said, you know, working on it, waiting on
it. Mr. Sanford's got something.
Yeah, you have sponge crab dates. What exactly do you have on your mind with that?
Changing the days you can keep, how many you can keep. Adjusting those somewhat.
So that's something that could be a 2022. That's something that could be a 2023.
Can I ask time limit. I don't know what time you can start and what time it can quit, but could reduce it out.
You think reducing the time limit would reduce overall harvest?
It would help it. Some of them are there, we before time and we after time.
And we do have exceptions to the time. We have alternate hours exceptions for those time limits. So when you say they're out there early, they do have.
I know that, but that's not being checked. And a lot of them do that. They get the thing to be. I think it should be one set time and everybody go by. If you can't do it on that time, it's your problem.
So maybe eliminate alternate hours except for medical.
1 hour.
1 hour. And that would be a
100%.
Why don't they have that middle of the night? And they can see better than I can.
Any other suggestions?
Well, not really. Not a suggestion per se, but I think being Jeff Bushel limits up there. I think in the past you all have provided data on daily landings versus what the bushel limit is for that category of license, right? Mm-hmm. Could we at least look at that?
Yeah,
something we are looking at right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're referring to, we almost had like a scatter plot up there that showed those daily harvests by individual and how many came up to that bushel limit and how much weren't quite getting there. I think that's what you're referring to in the past. Yeah, we have those available.
Okay. Those I think the next meeting those would be
absolutely
helpful.
So one of the things, and this is for the 2023, so you got all summer to figure this out. With pot tagging, it's always been who's gonna fund it. And if you can't come up with the money, I'm looking at the right guy over here. If you can't come up with the money to fund the program, don't even propose it, because it won't happen.
According to PRFC, theirs is about funding neutral.
Theirs is about $75 a license fee.
And
it's funding neutral. It pays for the administrative purchasing as well as mailing costs.
Do they charge more for the licenses then?
It's you pay $75 no matter which license for your tags.
Okay,
so it's a tag fee on top of your license.
You pass the fee on to the commercial board.
That is one business model, yes.
Okay. I think,
So with the season reduction, you know, something the commission has done before is closing female harvest before the end of the year. So what are your thoughts on closing female harvest, say, November 15th versus closing the season early for everything?
This will close the whole thing for us, I'm sorry.
That's all there is to catch.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is this committee would rather look at total closures, closing all of November, instead of just females in November, or from November 15th on. It'd be better to close the whole season than close
females.
It could
be the same, I think.
The problem when you do that is you can put more pressure on the harvester.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can hurt one thing and go to another thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Last year, in November, the crabs were more than the oysters were, so a lot of people stayed crabbing, and it helped the oyster fishery because it was that amount of people that didn't participate in the fishery. I don't know. It's tough to come up with something substantial because you got a fishery that's severely regulated as it is. I mean, we ain't got time to sit here and go through all the regulations that we abide by. So what do you do in addition to make a significant difference? You know, I just don't see much there. There's not much meat left on the bone, so to speak.
It could be a situation with jumping a gun, too.
Yeah. I've had the luck and pleasure of being able to deal with somebody from Louisiana now for a year and a half. And the reason I bought into Louisiana was having a retail store in Hampton. People love to eat crabs. I recognize the absence of crabs in the wintertime in Louisiana, having a season down there. I thought, let's give it a shot, you know. I'll have crabs for the wintertime to sell. So as it worked out, you know, I had crabs for most of the winter this year. And all you all know, Louisiana's got a nice crab, very nice crab. Always have had nice crab. And I continued that relationship throughout this entire year so far. And had I not, it would have been the most disastrous spring I've ever had, with not having any Virginia crabs. So I make that comment because they obviously don't have any problems. They got a nice quality crab, plentiful, and it's abundant. And now I recognize there's transportation that exists, that a lot of these crabs are coming into our state in Maryland and cannibalizing a lot of our markets. There's a lot of stores now that are looking for these Louisiana crabs. And in fact, in my store, I have local crab price and I have Louisiana crab price. And the Louisiana crab price is three times higher than Virginia. And the customers are coming in and deferring on Virginia when they see them, how small they are, and say, we'll wait for the Louisianas to come in tomorrow. Or comes three times a week. So, as Mr. Cox has said, we've been looking at this for 20 years. This is going around. It's coming back around again. I see cycles in the graphs. We're going through a downward cycle. What causes it? Anybody's guess. But we're all going to go through it. We're going to give up. But the underlying thing that bothers me is I think the quality of our stock is going downhill. And I say that because I buy a lot of crabs, folks. I'd see a lot of crabs dumped on my dock. Some of you may think, well, your guys are selling out the big ones and they're giving you the small ones. Yeah, to an extent that happens, but I have some good guys that work for me that I know don't do that. So I hold that as, you know, rationalized that it's not just the bad guys doing crooked things against me. It's happening. We're looking at our male graph now, the lowest recorded male population in 30 years. You know, back when my dad was on this committee, long, long, long time ago, we talked about, you know, regulating things that made sense, that were rational, that were fair and equitable to all parties, not just the guys catching females on the lower end of the bay, getting penalized with the sponges, penalized with the sanctuaries, penalized with bushel limits. You know, we're going to go back down that road again. We're going to talk about putting females. And I understand we've got to have females to have the babies, but we got to have the babies, and the babies got to get to the sanctuary to have the offspring. You know, we know they don't swim in a straight line, but we need to sit here and really discipline ourselves and think about devising another management regimen to fix the problem. Because at the end of the day, if we have a product that no one wants, it's worthless. What have we done here? And that's what's most important to me. The picking industry is just about gone. So am I worried about losing all the sponge crabs? No. I don't have any pickers to pick them, nor does Maryland right now. So that should be cause for concern for crabbers. But at this juncture, you know, your return went up 14% because the supply and demand of the species will always dictate the market. They'll always dictate what you're going to earn. There's always going to be value. But if Louisiana or someone else comes in with a better value and a better stock and a better quality, you're not going to get the value you once thought you were going to get or think it's worth. And again, that's what I'm worried is happening, that the road we're going, the path we're going is that direction. And I don't want to tell the peeler potters to put the crabs back, and I don't want to, you know, shut anybody out of business, because we're all going to have to sacrifice in this thing. But I'm just hopeful that I can make a plea to somebody else that we have a stock problem. Now, a lot of crabbers and people think, well, that's the call ring. When you release all the small females, what do you expect the bay is going to be filled with? One class of crabs. Well, yeah, but the call ring didn't breed the crab. The crab was bred to be small. And yeah, if you do the number crunching, if you put all the small ones back, two small adults are going to yield a small child. They're not going to have rear big kids. Okay, that makes sense. That's why the cattle rancher puts the biggest bull out in the pasture to breed with all the cows. He wants big bulls and big meat. Okay, it makes sense. But if we don't protect the males and we don't protect the spawning class juvenile crabs like we're protecting the sponge female crabs, we've got to cover all facets. That's just my firm belief. We can't just look at one group and think it's going to fix the problem for all. We got to start addressing all of them, or try to address them, to see if it changes anything. Because we've been doing this. We've all been doing this for 20 years. And it's not changing. And we know we're fishing too many pots, and we know we don't want to tag them, and we know they're closing the coal rings off. We know all these things are going on, but we can't do anything about it, most of those things. We can try, but it's not working. We don't want to make laws that we can't enforce. There's no need in sitting here making up a law that we know is not going to be enforced. So let's do something constructive that we can enforce and we think will have reap some return. Otherwise, we're all just wasting our time. That's what I'm for.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I've served as his dad. He didn't fall far from that tree either. And I like the coal ring. I've mentioned this many, many times, and Ron and myself have argued over it for years and years. Johnny said what I've said many times. I've always been opposed to the coal ring. And if you remember a few years back, folks were starting to use the fish pots, which are paper pots. And I forget what percentage BMRC allowed them to use, 10 or 15% along with your crab pots. And why do you suppose people wanted to put a peeler pot on board baited for a crab pot? Because the crabs are so damn small. And that's exactly what we've done. And it's took a long time. And Ron, you listening to me? I've said this many times. I believe you've always supported the call ring, and I've always, and you admitted once to me that our stock has gotten smaller. And anybody who's crabbed for a period of years knows our crabs are getting smaller than they used to be. And I still say it's the coal ring. Like John said, and I've said many times, I'm a tall man. My wife's tall, and my children are tall. And over a period of time, you selectively breeding these crabs. You allow the small males to get out. I've caught sponge crabs not that damn big.
3 inches.
With a lemon on them. Now, common sense tells you if you've got a big sook and she's got a lemon this big, that's a lot of babies. And you've got a little sook this big with a lemon on about the size of a dime, you ain't got many babies. And I'm still, until the day I die, will be convinced that the coal ring is what's caused this for all these small crabs. Bait a peeler pot up with bait and staple it to your crab pot. And you'll see what I'm talking about.
So you're forgetting what I said actually probably over 10 years ago, 15 years, that the coal rings are the reason that we have small children. I've been saying...
No, it ain't been that long ago. I've been arguing with it for 25 years. It might have been 5 years ago you said that.
In 2002 publication on it, which I relayed here, I said that I looked at whether... So we saw it drop. When we saw a drop in abundance, we saw a drop in mature female size. And I looked at a couple different elements. Was it genetic? Was it just mechanical through call rings? And what I did is I looked at mature female size in Maryland and in Virginia. And in Maryland, we didn't see that change. The females in Maryland remained around the same size.
Well, you said they stay up, but they don't come down here no way. You said that.
No, I said they come down. They don't go back up.
Okay.
So as they're all migrating down, and that includes the tributaries in Virginia, they're getting culled. The larger females, mature females, are getting culled out. That's why Maryland can still have a decent female product, but Virginia doesn't because they're getting culled by the cull.
Well, do you support eliminating the cull ring then?
With the compensatory... management action, you know, maybe cut back.
Oh, so we'll get rid of the call ring.
Allow the larger females. Now, you could also put in a bigger call ring. That's what Louisiana did, by the way. I've been involved with the whole Louisiana certification they, you wouldn't want to do some of the things that they've done. They have a bigger culvert. They have recently banned the take of immature females, and they don't allow the take of sponge females. So they do things very differently, and boy, would you get into some arguments.
But we're going to have to do something. I hear the debate on the smallness of a female right now, but we kind of got to think about what we're going to do in 2022.
Well, so one option is to actually increase the call ring, but you know, you could do that by maybe allowing some change in the catch, whatever. But I do agree. I think the key thing is that we are basically culling out all the
females. Thank God. 25 years I've sat here.
Sam,
so you're telling me we're calling them out, period. Plain and simple. The big crab comes from Maryland because the salinity level, they grow bigger, correct?
And from the tribs in Virginia, right, too. They're all coming out.
This is my point. We're catching all the big crabs as they shed out in the lower salinity. And that's what I'm saying with the sanctuary. We're doing it for ourselves as far as the size of the crab by forcing crabbers right up the tributaries.
I'm glad you brought up the sanctuaries because we, a few years ago, I didn't say anything when you said it wasn't working. It is work. We have already published on that show that it reduced mortality on females, but it also caused some displaced up.
Right. What was the percentage that we're saving of the sanctuary?
Mortality, the fishing mortality rate for females that were in the sanctuary was about 1/5 or so that of females outside.
What savings in general, percentage wise, go into the sanctuary? I guess is a question.
They all go into the parts of the sanctuary. There's only some hot spots of mature females in the lower James that Alex has been looking at, but virtually all of the females, mature females, are going to the sanctuary. So it's enough, and I agree with something you said. This one in particular, that yes, they're getting off the trees before they go to the sanctuary.
Yeah, and your percentages were based on the area on the eastern shore that was included, right?
Yeah.
And now that's taken away. You can follow. You included the lower Bayside sanctuary.
You remember the debate we had? I wanted to impose a sanctuary corridor. That would allow some fraction of the females to make it all the way. Make it all the way. Maryland shot that down all the way. So that was dead. That was dead in the water.
It sounds like sanctuaries and coal rings are we want to add to our fall agenda.
Can I read something here that Chris just looked up? And I put a bug in his ear. Johnny, they have nice big crabs in Louisiana, right?
See again?
Nice big crabs in Louisiana. I've had friends down there. They said they had number one females. Yeah. It was giving me a hard time. My boat designer used to be down there. Right here, it says, Louisiana, each trap shall have a minimum of 3 escape rings. A minimum of 2 escape rings shall be located in the upper chamber flush with the baffle. A minimum of 1 escape ring shall be located in the lower chamber no greater than 1 mesh length from the trap floor. Beginning on July 1, 2022, all escape rings shall be located no greater than 1 mesh length from the corners. On. And they're 2 3/8 inches. And they've had them down there for years.
I hope 2 3/8.
So it had an effect their size of their crabs.
All right. So back to what we want to try to have for the coming.
And good conversation. Call rings is something probably more suited for the fall, not something we want to go in mid-season and change a week from now. Probably just requires greater discussion. As well as the sanctuary.
Mr. Powers, yes.
So let's bring up something that we have talked about at least 5 times since I've been on this committee. Potomac River has, I want to say 10, 15 years ago, increased their minimum size limit for peeler crabs, increased their minimum size limit for adult male crabs and females, I think. I'm not sure about females. And the reason they did that was because they looked at those crabs and they said, especially the male crabs, those are our crabs.
They're going to be here until they're harvested or something else eats them. If we let them get big enough, we will have a better product. That's something that I think you want to consider as we move forward, not necessarily this year, but certainly for next year or for discussion. We've talked about it before, and it's always gotten shot down. But if we increase the peeler size, then they'll peel out, and when they peel or shed, they'll be a bigger crab. And if we increase the size on the harvested crab, especially the male harvested crab, we'll get a better product in the long run. We'll just have to wait two more sheds before we can actually eat it.
Peel size now,
right? Just 3.5 inches, how much bigger you want it? You throw half what you catch over all summer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the first summer you will, and the next summer you'll
do it every summer.
That's right, but the ones you keep will be bigger. If you make it bigger,
Mr. Graham,
I believe 2 years ago we raised the bushel limit for fall.
Yeah, back up to 41.
So it's currently where it stands.
Yes, sir. Yes, that's part of what we're looking at.
I make a recommendation we go back to what it was before we raised it. That's the first thing I would recommend.
That's a gimme.
So that's right now we are looking at adjusting those bushel limits, and just changing November isn't going to do it. We can look at October, November. We can look at, instead of March, April. We can go further if we need to.
What, keeping the lower limit, bushel limit?
Yeah, the lower bushel limit. And as you guys pointed out, a lot of people aren't catching the bushel limit right now.
Right.
So
right
now. It would.
The last year, in certain places, they caught it every single day.
It just depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Not according to our reports.
Then somebody's not truthful in the reports.
Yeah. We can only do so much about the illegal harvest.
So we've talked about the spring and the fall being the concentration of our efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just offered up November. Go back,
mm-hmm.
But you've come back and said, "Well, we need more than that." So you all already have some kind of objective or target. Mm-hmm. And just going back to November is not going to be enough.
Yeah.
So
commission happy.
Yeah. So we're talking to Maryland and PRFC about somewhere 5-10%. And
say that one more time, Alexa. I couldn't hear you.
5-10%.
That's what we need.
And November doesn't get us there.
What does November get you? A couple.
1-2.
Yeah. Pretty tight.
April. Remember
what about the spring season? When we've
water temperature.
Water temperatures, yeah. I know you're
yeah.
Yep. And we do have reduced bushel limits in March.
We have reduced
bushel limits.
We left the sanctuary open longer than the closure date. Does that do anything wrong?
I don't think so.
Wouldn't do anything for us.
I don't think that we need to affect the ones that are moving to the sanctuary.
April.
Clearly, you will have some options or something on the table you can share with us.
That's kind of what we're looking. We don't have them right now. We are kind of looking. We have looked at things, so we do have some numbers in our head. But we are looking for guidance. So some of the guidance we talked about earlier is: would you like reduced bushel limits or closed seasons?
We have a black sponge crab closure. Can't save black sponge crab. Not helping it to extend that.
That's something we can talk about as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ron, what do you think of that? Depends on the time of year. You know,
what time of year?
You're talking about July and August. I think most of them are going to die.
They're already dying anyway. So, what's the point? I hate to say it. Your study's flawed. You're wrong about the percentage that are dying.
Whatever.
Yes, sir.
This is hypothetical. We do not have a bushel limit on males, correct?
The bushel limit is across all harvest. So, yes.
No. Is there a bushel limit on male harvest of crabs in Virginia?
No.
None.
That's specific.
Zero. So if we were to say, let's make a 10 bushel limit on males, is there a calculation for that? Are we only specifically targeting about females and getting that reduction? Males are off the table?
I think what Ram said earlier is what we're trying to do is protect females in the late fall and as they migrate back in the early spring. Females is what we manage on, so protecting that female stock gives us the most bang for our buck.
The thing about it is, it just drives me nuts, is we've taken all the female harvest areas and freedoms from the crabbers and forced them into the rivers to catch the males, and yet we can't do nothing about it. We don't get any credit for it. And I'm thinking it's part of the problem. Again, not the only problem, but part of the problem.
It's like right now in the spring, the creeks have been empty when the sanctuary was open. Everybody was outside. Now it's closed. Everybody's coming back in. And there's nothing there, but they have to come back in. I was the only one in the creek for 2 months. Everybody was spread out.
What creek are you in?
Ocahonic. But there was nobody in there. There's a bunch of them nobody was in. And now it's 3-4 people coming. Because they have to.
Mr. Chair,
does this give you enough to go on? I
was going to say, is there a time we should open up to public comment?
Yes, I think I see a man back in the back there. He's got his hand up.
For public comment, please do state your name and your participation in the industry so we can have that for the record.
All right. Good afternoon.
Good evening.
I'm sorry. Good evening. My name is Andrew Stith, and I was born and raised here, and only thing I'm in the industry is to make it right, to make some differences because I'm going to take this off. Being born and raised around here, being in the crab industry, I know Mr. Graham. My grandmom used to work in my Clary Vincent used to work in my in your
pig house.
In the pig house over there. And thank you. Really thank you. There's some proposals that I wanna put together, and I heard y'all argue, and they were saying that y'all had 20 years. But man, you know, as my studies, I used to be, to tell you the truth, when I was in college, I used to go to ODU in Norfolk State. And one of my studies is I used to be an oceanography major. And what we did was we went to the Chesapeake Bay. We did Chesapeake Bays, and we did surveys on crabs and their budding and their, you know, producing and stuff like that. And I was like, and I was listening to what y'all were talking about, and I was like, wow. Me being, you know, leaving the military, I was away for 20, 30 years, and y'all still talking about the same thing. And I came back home to make things better, hopefully to make my things better. I don't want to talk a lot. The proposals that I was talking about doing, I don't know if y'all never thought about it. When I was growing up and I was thinking about today, in the past, in the day now, I always wondered, more diversity? Why is there not no diversity? I just don't want no answer. More diversity in the industry and future of the, and also training our future kids and future people in the industry. Service members that are coming back, like me, that like to get into the industry, different industries. Can we get into it? Also, you was talking about males and females. Yeah, that's part of life. We do it too. But one thing about it is, like, when I was stationed in Fort Lewis, Washington, they had the same problem with the salmon industry. You know what they did? You know what a lot of these, you know what the oyster, you know what the oysters they doing up in EVMS? Guess what they do? I don't know, have they ever tried to establish hatcheries?
Yes. Yeah. It's high. it's very expensive, and it's not, it doesn't work very, you're not going to be able to produce the number of crabs you want.
I mean, yeah, yeah, but you know, one thing about it is you can do studies.
They do the studies.
They do studies. Okay.
It's not economically feasible.
Because I'm just saying, because the public, us public, we don't know. That's what I'm saying. Because there are STEM, there are future scientists out there that can do studies on it, that can engineers that we can do all that stuff and make and bring our ideas to the table. You know, yeah, Maryland up there, because the tributary is closed. Ours is always open. You know, temperature. So I understand that. Also, yes, surveys. And also, just like everybody else, with different licenses and everything, raise money. Raise money. They raise money for the state. They raise money for the, I get calls for the state troopers, you know, for their families. So why can't the private industry raise money for whatever? So this, I know one thing about it. Hampton, I was born here and raised here, and I love this city, and I love this area. And this is, and I went to Hampton High. I don't want nobody to be biased, but this is where everything started. And I do not want, and I hate to hear that everything is going down. There's ways that everything could go up, come up. So that's what I'm saying. Closing the season. Oh, man. So if you close the season, how's that going to affect the prices? Because Louisiana is different, just like the Puget Sound, just like down in Key West, all that's different because of different temperature, different turbidity, different location, and also I don't know where they're from. ODU and all these different areas, they have people that can, you know. When I was in ODU, we did studies on that. I know you probably said it doesn't work, but we can try other means, you know. We try other means because there are different technologies that we can use, for that. So I would hate to see, for me, I love crabs. I love crabs to death. But I would hate for this industry that's not just tobacco, this industry that made this city and made this nation what it is to be dissolved for the same old thing. We have to break it down for some type of solution, you know. Some type of solutions, you know, have peer groups. Have different minds to come in, young minds for us to do, you know, y'all can do different things. So that's all I got to say. I know I got a lot of stuff to say, but I said thank you to y'all, even the ones in Pocosin, all the ones, thank you, because it made my family and made us what we are because of the crab industry, and I hate to hear that. And I hate to hear that. Thank you. And I'm still buy from the market. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
My name is Dan Holland. I live in Suffolk. I'm an 80-year-old retired, not a commercial crabber, but a recreational crabber. And I think, are you the only recreational representative? I have a lot of respect for you guys listening tonight. Y'all go through a lot. They should have a TV series about you guys. They got it for lobsters and salmon and snow crabs, but not blue crab. I agree and disagree with the commission's presentation that they gave you. I agree that the female crabs are down. Last year in the Nansemond, I probably didn't catch 15 to 20 female crabs in my pots. the season in what area do you fish?
The coast.
The coast, all right. I'm Nansemond River. And our season starts June 1st, goes through September 15th. I don't even put my pots out until the middle of July because nothing's going on in June and even the first part of July. September the 15th, I do start getting some crabs, but then I got to pull my pots. And latter part of September and October, November, you can walk on crab pots out there because a lot of crabbers come in from the coast and different places, I think, and they do a good job. But that's what I disagree with the commission is the reduction of the five-pot season. Right now, I probably have a 16-week season we have. I might luckily get 8 or 9 weeks out of it and I can catch some crabs to speak of. Most of the times, it's anywhere from 3 crabs to maybe a dozen that I get out of 5 pots. My wife and I love to sit and pick crabs, put it in the freezer for our kids. As far as the reduction of the season, and I don't know about your area. In June, do you catch any crabs?
Dipping for them, yes.
Sir?
Dipping for peeler crabs.
Peeler crabs,
May,
okay.
June, yeah.
Well, I don't catch any peeler crabs. And like I say, I don't even put crab pots out in June until mid-July where I can start catching some hard crabs. So if the season's going to be reduced, reduce it in June as far as I'm concerned. But I would like to see it extended to September 30th to give me an opportunity to catch some crabs. And like I say, I appreciate what you guys are doing. I have a lot of empathy for you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
So my name is Scott Weibel. I'm a commercial crabber over in Cape Charles. I wanted to start off by touching on something Rom said when I first walked in, that the year one crabs are not returning the next year. And I'm pretty sure that graph showed exactly why. In April is your highest year of harvest. Mark Sanford touched on why. All of your out-of-state crabbers basically come March and April, and they're gone by May. So we are letting our fishery be run out by out-of-state crabbers before the crabs even have a chance to reproduce. Me personally, I pretty much stop crabbing in May too. I start fishing through June, July, August. I usually don't crab the rest of the year. Personal opinion is something needs to be done about the spring fishery, whether it's a reduced bushel limit in April like it is in March, to help keep some of the out-of-state crabbers from coming down here because it is far too lucrative for them. And their season starts April 1st anyway. So if it wasn't worth them coming down here, they would stay at home, they would crab at home, and it wouldn't be such an effort on us. He said there was a mass at Mojack this spring, and boats came and caught it up. There was probably 20 Maryland boats out of Cape Charles that were running to Mojack and catching those crabs. They come down. Everybody in Virginia normally fishes small rigs, 200, 300, 400, 500 pots. They come from Maryland with 800, 1,000, 1,200 pots, and it's known by everybody. I have videos, stacks of them, pots on the docks. I turned into law enforcement, everything this spring. Trail loads of pots with not a single call ring on them. Trail loads of pots where they were closed, no numbers. They come down and do whatever they want in our fishery and leave before they ever get a ticket because they fish the deep water where they cannot be checked. Something needs to be done about the out-of-state crabbers. It is overrunning our fishery. Simple as that. If you can't put a time limit on, if you can't like put a start date on the out-of-state crabbers, personally, I'd rather take a hit myself and reduce my bushel limit through April to keep them out. Because April 1st, when the bushel limit goes up, the push price drops in half almost instantly. Because everybody's baiting up with razors, pots are doubled, tripled, quadrupled up because they have 2-3 licenses. They ain't fished them in a week. So half the crabs they're selling are trash, they're hockey pucks, they have no claws, no legs. Bushel limit goes up, they dump all that trash on the market and the price drops. Keep the bushel limit low through April. Let those year ones make it to a sponge crab and sponge out because we already protect the black sponges. We already have so many limits on all that, but that never gets seen because all those out-of-state crabbers, they leave as soon as they bust. They leave well before they bust. Look at April. That was literally the highest month of the entire year. And you can't tell me there's only 20 out-of-state licenses. I don't care who says that. You go to Cape Charles in March and April and tell me there's 20 out-of-state licenses. Yeah. There was a boy in Cape Charles. He hinted on it. He got kicked out of Maryland. He agented a Virginia license. He's working in Virginia as an agent and got a ticket for coming in over his limit. He had 50-some bushel on board. He was the one that had a video, every call ring, his whole rig, not a single one open. Every call ring closed. So we let him come down here, run over our whole fishery. He's an agent, so he's not going to lose his license. He can just agent somebody else's license or whatever the next year. We're doing absolutely nothing to control our fishery, and we're letting it run wild. Simple as that. That's all I got to say.
It's a joke. You're talking about limiting November. That's nothing but Virginia crabbers. You're hurting Virginia to help Maryland.
A lot of things he said was absolutely true. One of the problems I have is we should not be punished to eliminate Merlers from coming here. We've got to find a plan so we can eliminate that problem, but not punish ourselves to get rid of them. There's got to be another way to do that. We've talked about this for years and years and years and years. And when Mr. Pruitt was commissioner, he did say at one time, if it ever comes to a point that our crab fishery gets to a point it is declining, that would be the opportunity to change that regulation with the Merlers. Now, we all know this mobile home in the Cape Charles area. We all know that there's a problem with too many pots in the water. We know that. We know the Merlers come down and they do that. We also know the call rings are closed. But that's a law enforcement problem that should be taken care of. When you bring a boatload of pots down on a trailer, and they're right on the trailer, you can walk by and see it. You don't have to be an Einstein to know that these rings are closed. Yeah. So.
And they're not allowed to give a ticket for a pot on the dock. Yeah. You can have 500 illegal pots on the dock, and you cannot write you a ticket.
But
and then when they put that pot in 50 foot of water, you will never find it, and you will never be able to write a ticket. Simple as that, because a pot in deep water spends 12 hours a day underwater, you will never find it.
But I do stress that we should not be punished for other people's actions.
Yep. Half the stuff I look at up here hurts Virginia crabbers, and it helps nothing.
Yeah, I really appreciate what he's saying.
Yeah, I think
I'm going to shock Marshall, but I think one potential alternative is to reduce the bushel limits as suggested in the spring, and we could even potentially reduce the size of the sanctuary some, because then when that's in place, then it allows the Virginia crabbers to crab legally, and hopefully in the spring get rid of the illegal crabbing and allow a lot of those females to make it to the central part of the sanctuary. We're just taking a look at the sanctuary. There are definitely areas where crabs are not as abundant as they are.
And the graph shows that April is the highest month. And that's literally, I'd like to see the report tell me Maryland's report.
If we get what percentage do you think we gain if you didn't cut the bushels back in April?
That would take some work.
You said November was only a few percent. What would April be?
We'll bring that back to you in June.
But you still have to take consideration the water temperature. Every year is not going to be the same. You can close it to the 15th of April, and it can be snow on the ground. And the following year, it can be 90 degrees. So you've got to remember that Mark and myself went through this forever trying to get extended in November, because there's years in November you can continue crabbing, and there's years that you can.
Well, the problem with this is we have to do something, period. That's the bottom line. The Virginia crabber is going to take a hit no matter what.
Yep.
And we need to do it, period. We need to figure out what's going to solve the problem that we have now.
Yep. And when we're looking at these numbers, we're not looking at last year only. We look over a range of years. So we should have some years of good spring weather and some years of bad spring weather, so we get an idea across the different conditions.
Well, my main concern is my first question. I said it many times, and we all know it's been here for a while. Normally, what VIMS and VMRC recommends, if we don't agree with it, normally it goes. And if we can work with VIMS and VMRC together in a joint venture, normally it works out better for us. So one of my first questions tonight was, what Jack Travis did and Ronald Riley, they always had something on their mind. They would tell us what they were looking at. You haven't told us anything, exactly what you have on your mind, so we can discuss that. And the same thing goes for Ron. I mean, I know he's got something on his mind. I know you all got something on your mind, so share it with us.
All right.
I don't need to grin and laugh at Pat. I've been coming here a long time.
Long time.
Marshall, and I apologize for this. We're doing things a little bit backwards this year because the CBSAC would have normally met by now, but because of scheduling, it's not until Wednesday. We felt the need to, you know, this meeting was to basically just tell you what was in the winter dredge survey, the results, and say, you know, it doesn't look good. We're going to have to do something. The CBSAC will meet on Wednesday, and they'll come up with some idea of what has to be done. Like Alexis said, somewhere between 5 and 10% is what they were looking at. So that we will go look at some of these things and some of the things that were proposed tonight and see where we can come up with that. So that's why we're not giving anything definitive.
When are you going to present that to the commission?
Say again?
When are you going to present?
Tomorrow at the commission, all we're presenting is the results of the winter dredge survey. And that's what we typically do. We typically meet with you guys, tell you the results of the winter dredge survey, and we've already met with CBSAC. And then all it is a discussion where we tell them what's happening. Then we try, if there's something has to be done, we meet with you guys again. And then we take those measures in June to, and I apologize for us being vague because we don't know what we're going to do yet. We're just trying to get a feel for,
That's fair.
And I think that's, and I apologize for that, but it's like, we were trying to schedule that CBSAC meeting and there's 14 of us, I think, and no date worked for everybody. And we wanted to make sure that all the managers could be there as well as all the key scientists. And that was the date that we came up with.
Well, another thing I wanted to mention is a few years back, I made a recommendation to turn into a motion, is that that we should get these reports from the dredge survey before we come, because it gives us the opportunity to look at it. And I made that recommendation to turn it into a motion, and it was passed, that we give this board an opportunity. I serve on different committees, and before we have a meeting, I'm chairman of the Wetlands Board in Northampton County. We always get a package. In order, the commissioners of BMRC get a package. And we should get a package before we come here that gives us an opportunity to look at this. And I did this several years ago. And here we are again. Some of us have been to work today, and we're trying to go through this, and you guys understand it entirely because you're reading it right off. It doesn't give us an opportunity to look at this information. So when we come here, we're not, you're talking and I'm trying to look at this and look at that. That doesn't work.
I mean, I agree. It's, like I said, the press release was delayed. Maryland was delayed in the press release where we would have liked to get out the press. We try to do the press release first, so it's just general information about it. But I agree. I mean, we should do a better job.
I don't mean to be rude. I'm sorry, but
the general consensus is among the jurisdictions that we all try to put this press release out on the same day. Well, our policy on how we do it versus Maryland's. Maryland says they got to go all the way up to literally the governor to get their press releases. Okay. So it takes a lot longer to get things done there. And, things have just been delayed this year. And I agree with you. We should try to, get this information to you more in advance. The concern we're having, with if this information gets out the moment we have it in our hands, what's going to happen is our phone is going to be ringing off the hook, and people like Alexa aren't going to have the time to be doing the analysis they have to do because they're going to be answering questions on the phone all the time. So, and we want to, all the jurisdictions want to make sure they're just sending the same message. Yeah. And that's, so it takes them, it's hard enough for us to agree with something. Think about trying to work with three different jurisdictions and trying to get everybody on the same page.
We also work with Maryland to make sure we're not taking, say, a 5-6% cut, and they're taking a 2-3% cut. So that's part of our process, is coordinating across the jurisdictions. And adding on to what Pat said about what we're doing here tonight, this is something we had to do with FMAC earlier this year. We knew we had to take some reductions to the recreational black sea bass fishery, but at the time of the meeting, we didn't have a way to make those numbers. So we went to them and we said, we're going to have to make some cuts. How would you like them? Where in the season would you like to see cuts? How far would you be okay losing a bag limit? What are your priorities? So we don't have an option here that we're married to. So tonight is about coming, what is the committee interested in, what is the public interested in, and that way we can shape our options. Because when we went to FMAC, they said we'd like to see cuts taken out of the end of the year. And some people were interested in a bag limit decrease, but only this far. And some people were not interested. So we were able to make options, which we brought to the next FMAC meeting, and say, based on what you wanted, this is what we have. These are what makes the numbers work. So because we don't have the numbers for this yet, that's something we're working on. We've got people coding madly during the day. So once we have your input from tonight, we can go back and spend our time on things that are acceptable to the committee, acceptable to the public, and then we'll bring those back to you in 2 weeks.
I know years back we used to do the same thing with Merlin. If we were going to take a percentage cut, we'd sit there, we'd agree to it too. Yeah. And a lot of times it did because it looked bad. When we would take a cut, they weren't willing to give a cut. So, yeah.
Ron?
Good. Just suggest what I think would be effective in terms of the spawning stock and also would spread out the patch. That is to make some bushel reductions in March, April, and May. That would allow the crabs to enter the sanctuary, and then in return, we could reduce the size of the sanctuary so that you're catching crabs in, you know, the outlying areas. And that way, you could be catching crabs in June, July, and August and stuff outside the sanctuary. That's something that I could see that would be a win-win situation. Now, of course, the devil's in the details with that, with the actual numbers, but I'm in terms of bins, we would be open to do something like that.
Mr. Powers, our next question.
I would like to ask staff. I think most everybody here can get emails, I think. At least it seems like your list when you send them out has everybody. Would it be possible to email out on Friday afternoon staff's presentation for the meeting the next week for this committee and FMAC? That way people have a chance to look at it and digest it before they show up. And it can be draft, and you can make changes, because sometimes you don't have everything all done in advance. I know I do a lot of Monday presentations on Sundays. But at least that way people can get a chance to get a feel for what's going on before they show up. You can also put confidential on it, too.
And you got the press release on Thursday, correct? We did email that out to the committee.
But it didn't have any of the real data in it, I think, or had some, but not as much as your presentation did.
I think we can provide something. Let's think about how, you know.
I mean, just the slides, what you said.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how.
The slides would have been fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out. The slides without explanation may not help. You're going to have to put some text behind it. Yeah. I mean, I think we can provide something.
There's always a comment field in PowerPoint.
Yeah.
All right.
He said you got
staff, do you think you've got enough to go on from at this point?
I think we have a good start. So we'll be able to bring things back. And you should all have my number. If there are options you don't see here tonight that we haven't talked about tonight, you want us to consider, give me a call. The sooner the better, so it's something, if we have the numbers, we can work them. Give me a call. Let me know your ideas. You have friends who have ideas. Have them give me a call. So.
Phone number.
757.
Can we reach you? Yep.
247.
Yep.
2069.
That's it. You got personal one or two after.
When I nope. Get four or five. That's my direct desk phone. So we are talking about a CMAC meeting. Same time, same place on Monday, June 6th, or Wednesday, June 8th. Does the committee feel they can make a decision tonight on availability? Is this something we want to follow up with by email in the next day or two?
Say June 6th or what?
June 8th. That should be the Monday or the Wednesday.
What do you think, John?
Monday work for me.
Whatever you want to do.
Monday work for me.
Monday work for me.
Can't do Monday. They got one Wednesday.
I'll do whatever.
We got one Wednesday down here.
I think Potomac River meeting on the 8th for the 6th. Commission meetings.
Let me check that.
Because it was the 2nd, they postponed it a week.
June 9th is the Potomac River meeting.
Okay. All right.
And then Wednesday is their Blue Crab meeting, this Wednesday.
Okay.
So it seems like more of us can meet on Wednesday, it seems like. Is that all right with everybody? Good? Great. Wednesday it is, the 8th.
Wednesday, June 8th. All right, and I'll follow up on that by email.
What time?
4 o'clock. That seems to work for everyone.
All right. So we'll have a motion. Motion to adjourn. So moved.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Alexis.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.